Welcome to the Performance Health Podcast. My name is Tim Caron. Today, myself and Corey are going to be talking about inheriting versus designing. One thing that we find out when we get a weight room is most of it is decided for us, that we are inheriting from our predecessors and we have to manage the room. One thing I want to get across, though, is that that's not fixed. You can move things around. You can adjust things to accommodate your program. But what you really want to think about is if you had the opportunity to design your weight room, what would that look like? Would you regress to some sort of mean that you've always been a part of? Or would you do it in a way that facilitates the ultimate program that you want to correct or write? So this is going to be a fairly fun episode. Hope you guys are enjoying these. Please like, subscribe, share, leave a review, all that good stuff. Head over to phpodcast.com. We got a ton of stuff coming out. We got our foundations course coming out. We got our coaching membership, we got our collective membership, and we have a whole bunch more in terms of blogs and everything else you can imagine under the sun, phpodcast.com. All right, let's talk about inheriting versus designing a weight room.
Tim, we are back. We're season six talking facility design. Today we're talking inheriting a weight room versus designing, you know, your dream weight room. I think since most of us are realistically inheriting weight rooms, it's probably good to start there. So as you inherit a weight room, what are things you're looking at?
Everything have a purpose. There's a lot of junk that gets accrued over years and years of a gym being open. And on one point, there is a backstory to every piece of equipment, you know, that was either serving some sort of a solution to a problem that was just not being solved, or it was another story around we had a end of the year fiscal opening that we could buy a bunch of stuff. There was a donation. There was a whole lot of stuff. But the things that aren't being used, and I talked about it a couple episodes ago, but the dust test, if you walk around and you see it collecting dust, that means it's not being used enough. And it's probably taking up valuable real estate that you need to interpret whether it's actually worthwhile having. But that's the first place you start, is what is the actual usage of the things that are in your weight room? And asking yourself if you could do it without it, right? There is a concept, and there's a book about it called Minimalism, and this idea of we're probably always going to wear the same three outfits every week and one pair of shoes. So do we need 10 outfits? And what that does is creates a lot of decision fatigue. It creates a lot more stress in terms of your ability to make accurate and valid and appropriate decisions at scale. And if we can consolidate it down to things that are absolutely necessary, strip it away, or on another level, potentially just get rid of things that are a liability from either being in the way of something or maybe not kept up to adequate standards, it creates this cleaner, more simplistic approach to training. And this idea of there's two ways to look at a weight room. Open space is allowing for freedom of movement. And there's a motor learning concept of this too, where in neurodevelopmental patterns, if you insert a child into a small room, they'll explore the space. You can take that same child and put them in a bigger room and they'll expand the radius. Like their foot traffic pattern will go to the perimeters of that space. Now, if we have a lot of obstructions, that space becomes smaller. And there's got to be a purpose behind that, because one of the things you see with group dynamics is they monopolize all open space. And if you have a shortage of open space off of having a bunch of tools that aren't really providing any value, you are hindering or restricting that environment. And it may be actually toxic or maybe not beneficial, right? Like there's like so much social dynamics that you see with proximity to another person, right? You could look at it from the communal effect of these kids are going to class together, in a locker room together, practice together, in meeting rooms together, and then a weight room on top of each other, and they feel like they're cramped. It could create a lot of hostility, create a lot of anxiousness, or you just have this open space. And like that could lead into, oh man, like I feel overwhelmed by just endless abyss of nothing. And there's like always a perspective, like the claustrophobia effect or the vastness of like the universe, and people feel like small and inconsequential. Like there's a whole host of psychological aspects to probably unpack there. But the truth is, I think you have to really start with a simple premise of, is that tool being used? And if it's not, you should probably really consider why it's not being used and then making a really big decision on getting rid of it to allow for more space, because it gives you the opportunity to get something else that might be more useful or allows you to get space that might create a better feng shui or a better overall environment. And then the final aspect is you just look at it from, where are our limitations? Where are we getting bottled up? Where are we slowing the process down? And just the simple thing of like, hey, I go off of rules of three. So if I'm going through to a rack, I want to make sure that I have all my accessory pieces, at least one per three racks. So if I have a glute ham or a lat pull down or a leg curl, and if I have six racks, that probably means I need at least three, maybe in a better level, a perfect world scenario, one per, but at least three. Because if I can get to a B series and I can do a tri-set, I can allow for potentially, hey, I need to have one glued ham. So I can have one kid working on the glued ham while the other kid's doing a bench and the other kid's doing some sort of pillar work. It works out in a very logical way to create this natural rest and ingress and flow from one thing to the next. But that's a question of like, if I have one leg pull, well, a leg curl, if I have one glued ham and I have 12 racks, that piece is now unnecessary because you're never going to be able to facilitate the amount of kids you're going to get in one group, whether it's 36 to 48, 12 rack or 12 stations with one glued ham. And then it might turn into what I call the leper colony effect of you just send the marginalized, injured, not really that instrumental to the long-term success of the team over to this like area where they're doing a bunch of accessory exercise. Oh, he's got a boot on, so send him over the lat pull down, just tell him to stay busy. Or, he's a kicker, just make sure he's not talking to the athletes and you put him over there in a corner. Like there's that level of effect. And I think there's like there's a second order there that on surface levels, just trim the fat, get rid of the things that are, we can't focus on attention because most of the risk is associated here. Most of the ROI is going to be over here. I'd rather not see it and rather not exist, acknowledge it. But the way your weight room's designed, it can create a lot of blind spots. And I think it creates this potential downside to your program that you're not all encompassing and you're not able to provide the highest quality of service, just the way that stuff is organized and structured. But that's like where it breaks down to in terms of that. Like I just inherited a weight room. There's a lot of useless equipment. There's a lot of stuff in the way and there's a lot of blind spots that are created. Address it. Like what's the usage? What is the flow or the space that I need? And what are the blind spots that I have? And you can always move stuff, and maybe in a better scenario, you could probably potentially eliminate it, get it on Facebook Marketplace or just throw it in the dumpster. Like who cares? Like if it's limiting your program or the potential of your program, you should probably look to downside.
Yeah, it's funny that you mentioned that. When I first got here, we had all this excess to like random one-off things. And I was like, well, we got to get rid of all this stuff. And they're like, really? I'm like, yeah, we got 50 kids in here. I can't get 50 kids through that one station. And they're like, oh yeah, that makes sense. So then have you ever, you know, they were really open to that when I got here. Have you received any pushback on that sort of stuff when you've tried to do that?
All the time. I mean,
how do you navigate that?
Yeah. Ask for forgiveness as opposed to permission. I mean, yeah. Like the thing that you realize really quickly is the people that the entities that are holding on to things are maybe either traditionalist or rigid or stubborn and don't really see the shortcomings of their program because of this thing that's no longer effective. I mean, like I've been in so many weight rooms with pieces of equipment that have been broken down for years, if not decades. And it's like, are we going to fix it or are we going to get rid of it? Because either one has to be done here ASAP because it's just in the way. And then it gets into a back and forth like, well, you know, we don't have the money to fix it. And then we definitely have the money to get rid of it. It's free. And then it gets in this whole other back and forth like, well, we might use it one day. Well, we're not. We haven't used it in years. That's a very, very, I mean, how to win friends and influence people. It's making it seem like it's their idea. Like, oh, wow. Like, remember that one time we talked about getting rid of that stupid upright chest press that we have? Like, yeah, you're right. Yeah, I'll get on that today. Like that thing. Like, or coming in and off hours and just filling up a dumpster. Like that, I mean, I've done that. And like, come in a Monday, if no one notices it, that means it wasn't necessary.
Yeah.
Like, I've done that multiple times in my career, just getting rid of things in midnight hour. Off hours and no one noticed, which tells you a very glaring need to get rid of it. because it's not missed, right? And we could talk about that with staff, right? Like the person that's not missed was the person that was not necessary. And like there's, I'm not trying to, I guess, make people feel like inconsequential objects, but like there's a lot of symbolic nature to the lack there of awareness of something being there or not, and no one caring is probably means it's unnecessary. And it's just weighing you down. It's a ball and shackle to the level of program that you want to run and operate with. And you need to be able to cut that ball and shackle and go fast and go hard towards progress and evolution. There's always going to be people that are territorial, and it's less about the actual piece itself, but the symbolism of what that piece represents. It harkens back to, I remember when I bought that piece with my boss and I took over, and, you know, I have a deep connection to that. Or, you know, there's one workout where I was taking an injured guy through a workout and, you know, we just had like a great connection. And like, there's some like weird, like emotional connection to certain things, or like maybe like you got on a table and you said like, this is going to be the difference. Like, we need to get this thing in here. And you went on a ledge for it and you realize it's not the panacea of strength and conditioning that you would hope it to be. And then you're realizing like, it's not necessarily that. And I still need to kind of show the safe face here by not quitting on it too early. And we do this in so much stuff as is, right? Like, how many people have an old t-shirt that they don't wear, but they want to hold on it for nostalgia. And like, it's just not high performance, man. Like, it's obstructing the bottom line. Like, we have to really, really make sure that we're doing a good inventory of what's necessary and unnecessary, and be willing to make hard choices, right? Like, the, you know, there's hoarders in every world, right? And hoarding is less about a functional need to keep something, more about a psychological attachment that people feel a deep connection to. And they feel like they're losing a piece of their identity when they get rid of like inanimate objects that don't serve any purpose.
On the other end, it could also help with buying. Because I know I came in here and I was just reshuffling everything, rearranging, getting rid of extra stuff. And then people came in and they're like, it looks amazing in here.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
They're more bought in. So they're on board now too.
Yeah. Well, there's like the reshuffling for the preemptive getting rid of. Like, I am moving the unnecessary things closer and closer to the exit over time.
Mm-hmm.
And then the next step is just moving outside the exit. And the next step is to move into the dumpster. You know, right. That like if you do a slow-mo or like a time-lapse photo of like every, like of the evolving seasons, like there's a stupid machine that you don't want or need that you're slowly moving away and away and away. And then it finally disappears, you know, like that, yeah. Like perfect.
I don't know what happens.
But now you see me, now you know.
Yeah.
Magic man.
And then we can shift into like, You can also add to that weight room. You have all this space open, and then you can also get into the, you got that buy-in. Then how do you go about maybe designing your perfect weight room? How do you approach those sides of things?
Well, I do think that's going to be the real shiny object in this episode. But before we get into it, I think what the thing, when like, to going back to your point of like, how do you address it? Always think about not just pinpointing or zeroing in on problems, but providing solutions, right? What would we benefit from getting rid of a piece? What would be a better piece instead of that? Like, what would be a piece of equipment that would enhance what we're doing? We have this weakness or limitation in our programming. If we were able to make a change or get a new piece of equipment or get space in that, would be of this benefit. Like, just thinking about that, like from a solution oriented as opposed to a problem oriented perspective, makes a tremendous difference of the perception. But that gets into the, what you just alluded to, of the hope of around like, what would it look like if you were actually designing your dream weight room? And I think I've asked this question a lot because I host a course every year called Foundations. And that's one of our thought experiments of like, design your perfect weight room. And you see people just struggle. They just struggle with the immensity of like having to pick everything. Mm-hmm. And there's like certain level of a brand loyalty, like, oh, I'm this brand's, like, I only do these racks or only do these pieces of equipment or only do these dumbbells or barbells, et cetera. There's a certain level of you just default to what you know. And like, this is the way my predecessor or my mentor designed the weight room. So therefore I'm just going to fall into that kind of pattern. Then there's a whole other level of when I just abandon everything that I know and do for something completely different if I had the opportunity? And I think that's when you have to do some introspection on, like, what is the bias that you may have? What is the lack there of thinking of why you would just copy or replicate what your boss was, especially the ones that just constantly just bitch about what they do or don't do and think about when they actually do get the opportunity to do it, they just do the same thing. Like, it just means that you're just generally negative and probably not really saying anything constructive, because you wouldn't have a tangible difference to what the person you're complaining about would be. And then the other aspect is the immensity and the pressure. Like, it gets right into that man in arena syndrome of, like, be careful of one day that you actually might be the one who's being judged off the decisions you make, and you are self-conscious about that. And you get into this, like, paralysis by analysis of, like, I always said if I had my opportunity to design my weight room, I would do this, this, and this. And now I'm faced with just a simple hypothetical, and they struggle. They absolutely struggle. I would do it so different if I had this space, and they do nothing, or they just do the exactly the same. And that is a very, very scary place to be. And I think it's overall really healthy, because what it does, it gives you some skin in the game and forcing you to actually think about what is best practice in designing a facility. And then two of, well, like, I maybe say things like a certain machine isn't well designed. And then I have an alternative option, and I have to start to evaluate that. Is it because a brand loyalty aspect, or because someone I actually admire or just have a higher affinity for values that product? Or is it because I've actually went through and I look at the design of that piece of equipment and I look at that and say, that is a novel tool with a design that allows for greater development, relatively speaking, to its counterpart that we currently have. And how would I do that? And then the actual ROI of that. So I just talked about the rule of threes, right? So if I have six racks, I need at least two of all my accessory pieces that I'm going to bake into my program, right? So we'll go back to that push, pull, hinge, and squat. Just start off with a 3-day template. So I'm going to do a lower body push with an upper body pull, a lower body pull with an upper body push, and just split that through the other 3 days or the other 2 days. So that means I need something that's going to be a squat variation with a potential horizontal row variation. Okay, well, that could mean I'm going to use a barbell and a dumbbell. Awesome. How close do dumbbells need to be? Do I need to have dumbbells at each individual station? Or do I like having a dumbbell area? And why do I like having that dumbbell area? Well, I grew up in a Gold's Gym and we had a dumbbell area. And I realized once I was done with bench, I would go over to the dumbbell area and I would do my dumbbell incline. And I'm like, oh, wow, I'm processing this of, like, that's just a weird pattern or some sort of loop that I've created of the association of, we need a dumbbell area. Well, can I do dumbbells at a station? Nah, it doesn't really, just kind of in the way. Can't do glute hams, or kind of always feel like it's something that I got to manage at the station, and that organizing that's kind of a pain in the ass. So maybe I'm like having a stigmatism against the cleanup or the breaking it down or athletes breaking dumbbells at a station. Like, I could have that bias because of, like, I've been the one cleaning that stuff up every day for decades. And then I'm like faced with this, like, well, why do I feel that when I'm trying to design a hypothetical weight room? Like, why am I averse to doing it a certain way, or why am I prone to doing a certain way? And I start to figure out, okay, well, what is my perfect program? And it doesn't have to fall into this antagonist pairing. But once you make a decision of going to a dumbbell station versus a dumbbell at the rack or adjustable dumbbell at the rack, you're going to get locked into some sort of predetermined pattern of programming. Mm-hmm. And then the next level is like, okay, well, I want accessory machines, right? So I need to look at, all right, these tools facilitate development of muscle tissue in a certain area or develop a certain pattern or joint angle. So if I want to maybe load a resistance curve and using a top, middle, and end range loading, because I feel like we do not have end range or middle range or bottom range type of loading. So I need to find a tool to facilitate that. And I look at different pieces of upper and lower body. Can I get a largely similar effect with a barbell and dumbbell with a large group? If I'm pushing the threshold with those exercises, might be negligible, but it might be like, well, for certain clients or certain athletes, it might be a valuable tool. Well, do I have a lot of injured athletes? Do I have a lot of elderly clients? Do I have a lot of very young, robust high school athletes that can tolerate a lot of kind of like deviation from the norm on standard movement patterns? And then do I really need 10 selectorized machines? I just feel like there's a lot of gaps in my program. So yes, I do. Okay. Why do you have a lot of gaps? Well, I work with a lot of populations that don't really do well with compound closed kinetic chain exercises. Then do you need 6 racks? I just think we need racks. Like, okay, well, if you're not going to be using that and you're going to be over here. And my point being is like the list of things, the inventory of things that you need when you start to face the truth of like, what is your program and what would you do if you had a perfect scenario? How would you organize it? And I know the shortcomings of my program and the limitations, and I find creative ways to close that gap. And I look at it from the stance of the awareness of that limitation can create like very organic and like innovative solutions. And then when you're faced with the daunting challenge of like, well, you don't have to worry about that. You got a blank check and you have open space. You can address that problem right head on. And I get stuck like a deer in headlights. And I'm like, I can go back and forth. Like having 10 machines taking up probably 1,000 square feet, would that be better served to just put a turf there and having a movement prep or a area that I can do accessory exercises with? Like, now the machines are valuable. Nah, sometimes the turf is valuable. And I think that process is really constructive and healthy and you soundboard it. But like that like notion of most people are kind of sitting on the sidelines, not really thinking about that, where it's the truth of the matter is that gives you some sort of really good decision-making and creative solution finding. And it's a light at the end of the tunnel. If you're an assistant working your job every day and just kind of doing as I'm told and just, I love everything that we're doing, which is natural. Like everyone has that. There's no job that doesn't have some sort of deviation from the absolute truth the top down does. Like, I don't care how high level the corporation is. There's always going to be part of that, like some sort of disagreement, which is constructive and you know, if it's done right. But the disagreement without any really like logical solution that makes sense to the problems that you're facing versus just doing something different, that's where it becomes really hard. But in the note of like where the hope comes in, it's that like, I put into perspective what your program is and figure out how you can execute that with anything in the at your disposal you want to get. And there's a whole host of things. And I think one of the other elements of this too, since I've been designing my home gym and putting it together, it's definitely getting a lot of like intrigue of like, well, why'd you get this rack versus another? Or why'd you get that piece versus another? Or, hey, like this place is getting pretty cramped. And like, I'll come back and say, like, it's not for general use.
Right.
It's for me. Like, well, at what point do you guys not get the point of like, I don't care. I'm not having groups in here.
I'm not training 10 people in here trying to take a group through it.
And that's part of the decision, right? Like, I'm like, I can get a very cramped space because I don't have to worry about other people. And like, if I do have a lot of people in there, let's say I start to get people start really coming out and start wanting to see me, I'm going to have to address that. And like, I'm going to have to maybe buy some sort of separate space to facilitate working with people outside of just me. But that process of inventorying what is the ideal, what is your perfect gym, playing around, experimenting. I mean, shoot, in this day and age with like Facebook Marketplace and everything else, if you have a 300 square foot space, you can put together, cobble together a space and you can start to work through like how much space do I need from the wall to the weight pegs? Or how much space in front do I need to have a bench to move in and out of a rack? Do I need a full rack to basically put the bench inside? Or do I need to go a half rack and just move the bench all around? All these stuff plays out in terms of the, all right, well, if I have a bigger space, let's say I have a 30,000 square foot space, what would that be? What would be the difference? And then you're faced with that 30,000 square foot space and you're like, okay, that's 30,000 square feet to clean and organize and structure. And usually 30,000 square feet space usually comes with probably 500 to 1,000 athletes. And you're like, okay, that's a lot of mini bits. That's a lot of foam rollers. That's a lot of like accessory stuff. Do I have storage? And all stuff that you're probably not really thinking about. But the truth is the healthy and productive and constructive exercise of putting together your dream like gym and from there kind of working through the problems of that and the shortcomings and thinking, okay, would that tool be better to have than not have? And do I have a solution I could have without having that tool versus I think it would actually be easier if I had that tool.
I think if you know, you probably feel similar, but it's fun, right? It's fun to think of like, okay, perfect world, how would I do? And it does illuminate like, okay, I can't address, you know, maybe it's hamstring strength because I don't have any selectorized hamstring machines or whatever it is. How can I address that, you know, without that? What can I do? How can I get creative? I just think it's fun. Like we, part of this should be fun, right?
But it's like, for the record, I didn't love Anthony Bourdain. I thought he was overrated. I just, I don't know. I don't think he was that full. I don't think he was that deep, to be honest. Whatever. I mean, maybe I'm an asshole for saying that. But like the one thing I did admire him about his culinary pursuit was to try to explore and seek how people approach food. And I think the same thing with strength and conditioning, like hopping in the gyms and just working through like, why is this there? Why would that, what I do differently? I feel like that's a very Anthony Bourdain thing to do. Yep. And by the way, who gives a shit if I care about like Anthony Bourdain? And I'm sorry if anyone's like, what the fuck with that? Sorry, but just came to my mind. But when I think about like going into gyms and having this process of trying to think about how things got put where they were and why they are where they are and a whole host of other things, I look at that and I wonder, how would I apply that to my own setting? And there's always like certain gym envy and there's always certain level of, oh man, like this is actually really not that beneficial. And what I mean by that is I can go into just a very like high performance space, which has a lot of open floor plan and maybe minimalist equipment like racks, barbells, dumbbells, and just bare bones. This is the tools that bring the most ROI. And then another level, it's this overly packed box gym with endless possibilities. Every piece of cardiovascular piece of equipment, every piece or machine, everything that you could imagine. And the usage rates of some of the things that are maybe just fringe and unnecessary, but it's this like perceived value of like, oh, there's more options, so therefore I'm going to get more value. You start to triangulate like what is absolutely necessary. And then there's a user experience, right? If you put me in a auto mechanic shop, not knowing a single thing about a car, it doesn't make a difference if it's the best in class tools and the best in class equipment, because I don't know how to use it. And that's the majority of the people going to high level boxes of like with just this nuclear arms race of like immense amount of pieces of equipment and endless options, is most of the times they're regressing to some sort of mean. And that's minimalist. Like I'm going to jump on a bike, probably do a couple machines and go home. And that's where it goes into the utility and the value of those pieces just for getting people to sign up for memberships, not to bring direct value to those clients. And there's something to be learned about that, because we're all working with some sort of either fixed budget, fixed timeline, or restricted space. And we need to be more conscious of the investments we're making, the time that we have, and how we're utilizing our space. And if you're just walking around a box and you're thinking the default is about 10% of the pieces of equipment in here, and you could probably track that by the breaking down of equipment and just looking at like something like a bench, like the faster that pad or the leather around that pad breaks down means the higher usage, the slower the breakdown, the lesser the usage. And that goes for everything. And you can kind of look at that from the majority of the folks here have no idea how to use these tools versus if I had those tools, would I use them myself? And you can get into a whole host of different things of like, there's probably, if you're keeping track at home, I gotta be at least 50 different barbells, right? You go from like a safety bar to a fat grip bar to a bamboo bar to a multi-grip bar. Like it's endless. And you could have this like fascination with having every one of them, but you're still only using a fixed traditional barbell. I don't know if that's necessarily a good thing, because you have to store those barbells. You have to keep those barbells up, you know, like do upkeep on those barbells. You got to use these things all the time. And I love a healthy amount of all a variation in my exercises. Like I do think there's a value there, but if you're not going to use them and you feel some sort of obligation to get them because other people have them, but you have no real use for them, there's probably better things to be doing through time, money, and space. And that's the part that like, I think from a whole building out your dream facility and what would be in there and just itemizing it and putting it all the way down to the smallest, most seemingly inconsequential detail is a very healthy exercise. And it forces you to really reconcile with what is absolutely necessary to the program that I want to run.
Yeah, no doubt. So listeners out there, you got some homework. So better get busy.
Yeah, get busy doing it, man. Because I hope as you're going through this, like you're going to actually do this. Because if I'm an assistant, if I'm a head strength coach in a weight room that I don't really want to be in, I just inherited, and then I'm waiting idly for that like AD to come in, like, all right, we got the money, you can do it.
Check,
like,
you go.
Yeah, exactly. You're not ready. That's on you. On you. Like a luck is opportunity and preparation, man. And like, if you're prepared, you have everything written out and you know exactly what you're going to get, it's just that much easier for you to get what you need.
Yeah. This has been great, Tim. I appreciate it.
See you, buddy.
See ya.